I'd heard about it and I knew nothing about people with learning disabilities.
What had you heard about the hospital?
It was just sort of terms like the loony bin and that kind of thing, which was, at the time, those are the kind of phrases used by people, I think. And I just used to think everyone, I had this sort of picture in my head as a young woman sort of thing, as it was kind of a place for axe wielding, dangerous people. The sort of stereotypical view of psychopathic murderers kind of thing, I think. I do. I remember visiting the going to the workshops and speaking to the manager, Mrs. Lonsdale, her name was, and then being taken up to the patchwork room I was in, and it was Blodwen Jones who ran that room, and it was probably about, I don't know, but 10 or 12 service users all working around tables. And I remember going in and being introduced to everybody. And then Blodwen left the room and everyone crowded around me to have a good look at me and try and suss me out. And I remember being quite scared then at that point. That was sort of thinking, oh my God, what's happening? Everyone's crowding around. And there was a big tall fella who was a lovely fella, but he was hovering over me, wanting to know my name and where I'd come from. Anyway, she came back and took me around the rooms, and I met one of the chaps that still lives in Bryn Mawr, and I thought he was a member of staff because he was in a tweed suit with a pipe and came to shake my hand, and I thought he was quite stern, and I just offered him my hand and looked up at him, and he was one of the residents who was, we used to call people, and the wards were villas, to try and make it sound more homely. And we didn't wear a uniform. I think when it first opened, they used to wear white coats. And when I started in the workshops, I was given a white coat, which I had to wear, which always felt a bit uncomfortable. And then when I started my training, nearly all the night staff seemed to wear white coats and tunics. But you'd never see anyone working the day shifts in that. The ethos was changing, so our training was changing, wasn't it? So we were coming on as newly qualified staff with different ideas to the older staff, perhaps. And that's how it evolves over time. I'm sure the new students now would probably think that we're quite old-fashioned in our views, maybe. And but we still did, work together to make progress there. You were always trying to, in those days, there seemed to be a lot more scope for improvement about the little stuff in people's lives, really, and helping people to have a better environment and more choice, and trying to have, it was difficult to provide an ordinary pattern of life for people, but you were trying to give people experiences outside the villa. And Villa 12, there was an open dormitory when I went there. So we tried using the wardrobes and some old-fashioned, like, medical screens to try and make the areas private, and sort of pushing for people to have their own bedrooms, really. But because some of the villas had cubicles, nobody really had proper rooms, but they had at least a cubicle, which wasn't ideal, but at least it was some privacy for them. But we managed to get some studding walls there in the end, but they didn't go to the ceiling because of cost. So, but then at least,
I think I've seen some of them
in Bryn Mawr, it might have been Villa 12. It's right at the edge of the ground, Villa 12, and it was, yeah, about that much short of the ceiling they stopped, I think. But at least it was. They had their own space then, and
could they get to decorate the
yeah, we tried to get people to choose if they could, and if not, we'd help make choice based on what we thought they'd like, and we'd do the wallpapering and the painting, which was would also not be allowed now. But there was a a great spirit of wanting to improve things, I think, then. That we were definitely trying to make it somebody's home, and we weren't, you know, we were supporting people, and we had assessments and care plans, and some of them were a little bit loose, to say the least, in some of the places I worked for in the early years. But no, there was definitely an ethos of trying to get away from the medical model and trying to make it as homely as possible and as a sort of ordinary life as possible in that environment, really. And over the years, I'd seen campaigning really for better, nice environment, and I'd seen it in a couple of places that I'd been. That, you know, you take to Villa 5, for example, we got rid of the box around the telly and introduced some ornament, and got the stereo out of the duty station and put it there, and got some nicer furniture, and you'd see a change in people's behaviour, and overall the behaviour reduced. You're just providing a nicer place for them to live. The hospital was split into units, so there'd be like three or four villas on each unit, and each unit had a senior nurse. So I think it was how the senior nurse ran it, really. There was, but it wasn't used. It was called the duty station, and all the switches for all the lights, and there were some alarms in there, I think. And it was like a glass little room, a room with glass all the way around, and sort of situated between the day room and the dormitory. It was. That wasn't an open dormitory there. There were cubicles. I was quite nervous, I think, and it was quite strict and hierarchical. And it wasn't one of the most forward-facing at the time, even though, I suppose, if you look back at the most forward-moving villa at the time, they're still quite behind to how we are today. But there were about 10 ladies living there, I think, quite a few with challenging behaviour. And the environment was quite regimented, and it was very task-orientated. And even with my lack of experience, I remember thinking, if the next placement's like this, I'll be leaving, because you'd all the meal times, they had to be a certain time because the food was brought up, but the way people had to sit. The day service department was developing at the time as well, and they got themselves a whole load of tents and a pool of walking boots and waterproofs and that kind of thing. So you'd manage to get the keys for the day service department at the weekend and go and find some pair of boots, take someone to find a pair of boots that would fit them, and waterproofs, take people off camping for the weekend, and or just walking for the day. And it used to felt like you were giving people an experience, and some people absolutely loved it and they hadn't tried that before. And I think that those kind of things contributed to what they're doing today. Well, I suppose they're winding down the day services a little bit now, but in its kind of heyday, if you like, before this last round of resettlement, they're providing a whole load of experiences for people, really. So I think people got like merit money, I suppose it would be called, so they got like a couple of pounds a week. There was a residence bank there, so, and I think the money used to come down, if I remember rightly, and then people were given envelopes. And for some people, it went straight into their bank account. Then they'd have to go up to the bank and sign the money out if they wanted it. So it was like, it was just a token, really. It wasn't a wage or anything. Nobody had their own clothes. They had to share from a pool of clothes, everything, underwear and everything. So there was a linen room down on the corridor. And when you were given a group of people to care for the day or for the shift. And you had to just go and find clothes for people and hold them up and figure out if they would fit. And then the next day somebody else would be wearing that dress or that jumper. And
did people get attached to specific items of clothing?
No. And I remember that thinking that was degrading for people, not having their own clothes. There was a lot of hospital-issue clothing at that time as well. You'd have like sort of nylonish jumpers and pants, and they had vests and underpants that were like this thick white cotton, and but they did have some of their own clothes mixed in with some of the hospital ones. So it was beginning to, you know, move forward in that respect. And that every afternoon, for no reason at all, you had to go and shut all the curtains in the dormitory and turn the beds down.
What does that mean?
Oh, sorry, like the then it was blankets and sheets on the beds. And then you had to like fold the bed down ready for somebody to get into it and take off the count. There were hospital issue counterpanes, and you had to take them off and fold them so that, you know, if people were incontinent, they didn't, the counterpane didn't get wet. And you had to do hospital corners on the sheets, and the nursing officer, who's quite a tyrant really when you look back, used to come round sometimes and do spot checks on your hospital corners. But it didn't so matter much what was going on with the residents as long as the beds were tidy. Bath time was horrendous. Everyone was taken down to the bath at the same time, and there was two baths in the bathroom, and so and all everyone was stripped off, and there was a queue of naked women.
How many women were on there?
About 10.
And how long did you have to bath them?
There wasn't a set time, but it was in the it was every evening, I think, this happened on that villa. And so the two baths would be filled, so you'd have two people bathing maybe and getting people dry. It'd be
was
like
there a curtain between the baths?
No, it was like a conveyor belt. It was horrible, and it reminded me of footage of concentration camps, and I remember thinking that, yeah, I was definitely clear in my own mind that if the next placement was like it, then I wouldn't be stopping around. You don't see it now. I think when we worked in the hospital, we were being paid a wage, and you just, if you did anything over and above your hours, you just got time in lieu. Now, if people want to, you know, people that are supported in the community, if they want to go away on holiday, then the agency has to be paid extra hours to do that. And it's, I don't know. How really?
For the patient's holidays back then?
They had to pay for their own, and they also had to pay for the staff as well. And it was the same on if they went out for meals and that kind of thing, which always felt a bit uncomfortable with me, really. But they wouldn't have gone otherwise. And I suppose, in a way, we contributed with our hours, because you'd never get your hours back because it was 24/7 for the week, you know. And not that that was it, really. You just wanted people to have these experiences. And seeing people away from that environment as well, and how different they were. It was still quite institutionalised in some respects. The telly was in a box with a Perspex screen, and there weren't any ornaments or anything like that. There were some horrible moulded plastic chairs with a trough in the back on a slight angle, so if people were incontinent, the urine used to run down, and people were toileted in smaller groups then, so that seemed more progressive. They had their own clothes. We used to take people hill walking, which would be banned now. We'd probably be sacked for it, because we had no mountain guide training, just your own personal interest. And when I worked on Villa 5, we did a few little expeditions up the mountains. That some, one or two of the photographs there are of, we took a group up Moel Siabod.
Were there ever any incidents?
No, thank God, because there were no mobile phones in them days either. So I think you would just had to plod down the mountain to get the mountain rescue team. And I think that's the thing of, you know, nothing in life's without risk, is it? And that you just thought, you weren't taking people to remote, inaccessible, you know, out in the total wilderness. So you were thinking that, well, I don't know, if someone broke their ankle or something, you'd be able to keep them safe, and there was enough staff around for one to go and get help. And I suppose we all felt competent enough to get up and down a mountain. We used to take people, obviously, you know, take people on holiday and that kind of thing.
Where would you go?
Oh, some villas took people abroad. I never did that. I've been to York and Newquay, Norfolk Broads, weekends away, that kind of thing. It was quite mixed, really. You get a lot of people staring sometimes, and looking quite disdainfully at people. And I suppose at that time you didn't see so many people around, really. Learning disabilities are all hidden away somewhere.
Do you think the residents picked up on that, or do you think they weren't aware of it?
The people that I supported, I don't think they were aware of it. We tended to be with the people with the more severe learning disability, and then you'd get people that would give a really good response as well, and not stare and interact with people. I know of some of people that I've resettled that keep in touch with people they used to live with, and if there's a birthday party or an occasion, they'll invite someone from wherever they're living to come over for that. But I don't think people interact in that same way, really. I don't think there weren't many people that formed close friendships. They hadn't chosen to live together. They were just admitted there, and got some people got along, and some people didn't. But I think where people are living now, the staff make efforts to keep them connections going, but I don't know if they have the same kind of affection as you'd expect, like old friends to have, maybe, but they are.